folks. Welcome, depending on when these videos are posted, welcome back.
Or welcome front.
I don't know which order these are going up in, but welcome to this edition of the B-Roll, where we've, Paula and I have just finished recording our review for Aladdin.
Go see it.
Paula had wanted to discuss Brightburn.
I did.
Because she's the horror fan of the cast, and I have no problem taking requests.
And it's not just a horror film aspect of it, but it's reminiscent of a Superman story.
Yeah.
But it's also a whole movie about nurture versus nature. So, yeah.
Yeah. And joining us for this one is Mickey Gorman from
Yay!
My Gender is Cinema.
Hey, Ellen, thank you for... I sometimes forget my real name.
Well, like I said, this being the B-roll, I put way less effort in, so I'm getting the plugs in real quick.
Do all you can.
Exactly. So, Brightburn, as Paula said, is... Well, let's be honest, it's basically... Superman's origin story if Kal-El was the Michael Myers of Krypton.
Pretty much, yes. It is the Superman story, but what if Superman was bad?
Yeah, I saw a great comment on Twitter. It said, this would have been perfect if right after the credits, a logo came up that said, produced by Luther Corp.
Yes, that would have been good. So, not to confuse it, it's not the Bizarro version of Superman, it's more like the Doomsday version of Superman, and I have that reference because I am that far along in the Smallville series.
There you go.
So, yay! Yeah, it's the super, you know, the spaceship crashes to Earth, and an infertile couple, or a couple that's having difficulty conceiving, finds this baby, and they raise him.
The way that camera panned over fertility books...
Oh, yeah.
In the opening?
Yep.
I feel like it's real safe to say that they're infertile.
Well, you know, they never do have a child of their own.
No, they and while it's not specifically flat out stated, at the same time, they visually beat you over the head with it to the point that there's no other place you can go.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, we all know the Superman story is the parents can't have kids,
yeah.
So...
I was really impressed of what really, really got me about this is it's not really an allegory of the Superman story. It's straightforward John Byrne era Superman. This is beat by beat. The infertility, that's from Tales from Smallville. The plane at the end is how John Byrne decided that Superman had to be introduced to the world. And since then, it's always been like saving a plane. Even Supergirl saves a plane.
Yeah.
And instead, just totaling it is like... Every beat of this is pure. You are Superman fans beyond and beyond.
Yep.
Every tiny detail. Lana Lang's the first victim. Perfect. She would be.
The reason I started cracking up as you were talking was that when you said allegory, where I flashed to is I didn't bother to read it because just from the headline, this article sounded incredibly stupid.
Okay.
But. It was either just last night or the night before I had seen a link to an article from, I think it was comicbook.com, where the headline stated that Brightburn makes the case that Zack Snyder's Man of Steel is the quintessential Superman movie.
No, in fact, it doesn't. It does it better. It says.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you thought that you know, people were like. Oh, Zack Snyder's like. Oh, people just don't like Dark Superman. And this one was like, no, people like Dark Superman. You just have to do Superman, and you didn't do Superman.
No.
Yeah. Like literally and truly.
Yeah.
And again, this is the nature versus nurture. How much of Clark Kent / Superman being that Boy Scout is attributed to how he was raised, and how much of it is his genetics? So this is where that movie takes that into question.
Yeah, and it makes a legitimate question of, like, why is Superman so human the minute he lands on Earth? Like, okay, the kid looks human, but there would be entirely different behavioral instincts. This is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
That come out around puberty.
And, of course, all of the hidden meaning of puberty, because we, as parents, know... puberty comes and your children change and you wonder who the heck you're raising. I love you kids.
Like,
Please don't throw mommy through the roof.
Like, yeah, like, for me, like, the whole nature versus nurture aspect, I kept going back to how I've often made jokes about how the Zack Snyder Superman, especially in Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, is what if Martha and Jonathan Kent were trying their hardest to raise General Zod, but somehow stumble into still raising Kal-El through pure dumb luck.
Yeah.
I didn't know I had a movie in this joke, damn it!
Money.
I could have had so much money! And, like, the fascinating thing is that I would almost half expect this movie to be how James Gunn got Suicide Squad 2, because as much as he's only the producer on this one, I'm pretty sure that everyone else behind the camera is related to him in some way.
As is typical on a James Gunn production, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. If I remember right, I think it was his brothers that wrote it. I can't remember the director's name, but I would assume that there's a connection there somewhere.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Banks stars in the movie, and if James Gunn is putting together a movie himself, she's going to be there in some capacity. Because as much as I haven't seen it himself, B-roll, I don't cut nothing. As I was trying to say, as much as I've not seen the actual movie myself, the trailers had me thinking of a lot of James Gunn's early work, like, of course, Slither, which, if there's a movie that doesn't involve Guardians of the Galaxy that he's known for, it's gonna be that one.
Oddly enough, it had me thinking of Super, specifically because of the way that it overemphasized very specific gore. Like, in Super, when
Ellen
Page's
head explodes.
It was
very gory.
Oh, yeah. And then that eye shot, and you're just like, this is going on forever.
Yeah.
Can I look? No. Nope.
And then, of course, Noah in the truck.
Oh, my God.
Just
that
the
was
jaw.
So
oh, yeah.
The steering wheel. And I'm going, okay. So, yes, this is a very big warning. If you have an issue with gore, don't go see this movie.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah, most films would have stopped with the steering wheel quick cut. No.
Nope.
And then, of course, you see the little boy putting his finger in the blood. And I'm like, is he going to, like, lick that?
Yes.
I half expected that he was going to.
Yeah.
But no, he drew a symbol.
Speaking of the symbol, I liked how super easy it was to just come up with something like that. It's like, okay, take the S.
Yep.
Double it.
Yeah.
Done.
Basically.
Perfect.
And it fits the double B of the character's name. But I like the fact that you see him drawing the symbol in his notebook over and over and over, so that has context.
Yep.
I liked that with the gore, as much as it's extreme enough that a lot of horror fans are going to be made very happy by the visuals that they do, at the same time, they don't overdo it to the point that most mainstream slasher films would.
It wasn't as cheesy as, say, Freddy.
No.
Yeah.
It very much didn't feel like they were just throwing buckets of blood on the camera for the sake of throwing buckets of blood at the camera.
It was very realistic gore, yeah. Like, people aren't overbleeding. People aren't surviving things that they shouldn't.
Yeah. There's, like, no spouting of blood coming from an artery.
No.
Exactly. This is kind of what it would look like in...
Yeah.
On its own.
Yeah. It was.
And, like, well, with, the jaw in the car crash.
That was such a good effect.
It was.
Yeah. I mean, you could hear the gurgling that could have gone to the point of overdoing it.
Yeah.
But again, they really don't. And again, even if they did, it would still have been in context.
Yeah.
But for me, this was kind of like half Superman origin story.
Yep.
Half the horror movie Orphan.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, like, for me, as someone who's not really a fan of horror films in general, That was my favorite horror film from the moment it came out.
Yep.
Until I discovered that the Norwegian film Thelma was a thing that exists.
I haven't seen that one yet.
It's a gloriously insane, LGBT-friendly horror film that in the first 5-10 minutes will do things that no one in Hollywood would have the balls to do. There were spots where the CG was a bit shoddy. Like I could see the green screen, but with this, where if I remember right, this was done for I think like $7 million.
It wouldn't surprise me to know that it had a very low budget.
Yeah.
And for that low budget, it's impressive. I've seen higher budget fail hard.
Yeah. Visual problems like that, when it's this low a budget, I can go, I can forgive you for that, no problem. The only real negatives I had aside from that, I would have liked Brandon to be developed as a character a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you have to factor in age, experience, but there are a lot of spots where it didn't bring home the feels that it could have brought home. Either the writing was too forced or the acting wasn't as developed. And it's not just Brandon either, it was a lot of the cast.
Yeah.
I'd still like to see it again, just because I know that there are probably some things that I've missed. It was an interesting movie.
Oh yeah, it definitely was. There were things that kind of just happened. With Brandon's mask.
Yeah, it would have been nice if they explained that.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen people say like, oh, that's what his people actually look like. And it's like, okay, make it clear that he doesn't actually look human. Like, something has happened as part of his species' natural nest wasping thing that makes him look human, and this is what they actually look like.
Yeah, no, exactly. Or even just have him drawing the mask in his notebook before we actually see it.
Yeah.
Like even just like something to give it context.
And that may have been cut out.
Entirely could have been. It seemed like with Brandon, they were trying to create that iconic horror character.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite get there.
Yeah, they want to have both the Superman look with the red cape.
Yeah.
And you know when spoiler alert, when the mother is falling and she sees him flying there with the red cape, it's like, okay, great, awesome. You didn't need the mask for any of that.
No.
The fact that this is little boy Superman trying to kill you,
yeah,
that's enough. And it raises a question in my mind, at the same kind that Man of Steel did, is does Superman exist in this universe to reference to? Like, with the red cape.
Yeah.
Does that mean something, or is that just something the kid created?
No, and particularly where this is, like, let's be honest, this is pretty much an unofficial DC Elseworlds tale.
Yeah.
Like, and then also, again, this being a James Gunn-related project, Michael Rooker shows up in the stinger at the end, because it's again, of course, playing Alex Jones, let's be honest.
Yeah, more or less.
That's pretty much exactly what he's doing, and I appreciate, essentially, the balls of the filmmakers for doing this, but he's there to set up almost DC horror spin-offs, because as much as he's showing what happens with Brandon, like, after the movie, which, and again, the simple fact that he covers up the killing of his parents by throwing a plane at his house.
It's like that certainly will work, I guess.
Which is, like, in all honesty, my kinds of crazy.
Yeah.
It totally explains the destruction of the house, the dead parents, maybe not so much the dead cops.
Yeah.
But why were they there in the first place? Anyway.
And the fact that he's the sole survivor and, of course, doesn't have a scratch on him. But
also, it doesn't hit the barn at all. So there is not only an alien spaceship in the barn, but a woman gutted and pinned to the wall.
Yeah. I know! Oh my god! So, again, gore!
Oh yeah!
Just...
But like, for a truly gory moment, they shot it so well that you're just like... Okay.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Have you guys ever listened to Last Podcast on the Left?
Nope.
They mostly talk about, like, serial killers, like mass killers. But something that reoccurs in almost every single time that they hit on a serial killer is that obsession very early on, usually around puberty, with guts. And that's what immediately hit me is like, oh, yeah, he's associating sexuality and guts. He's a psychopath. I just expected them to maybe have the parents think that's what's happening. It's not that he's an alien that's going to kill us all. It's just that he's a little crazy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, let's be honest. Frankly, if the parents had thought or talked to each other for an extended period of time, this movie would have been about a half hour long.
Yeah. Yeah. If maybe she had the mother had listened to the father when he starts going, no, seriously.
There's something wrong. Yeah.
He just threw me through a wall. He's 12.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, what, a half an hour or a day later, it's all fine. It's all good.
We're going hunting.
Yeah.
And, like, not like even before that, there's a scene where the dad sees the kid just in a trance standing there on, like chewing.
Oh, the fork.
Yeah.
Why didn't that go any further?
Yeah, exactly. Like, the camera pans around. The dad kind of reaches down and kind of pulls the fork out of his mouth.
This mangled fork that, you know, he's been eating, he's been chewing on.
And it's like, it's clear-cut questions should have been raised then and there.
Yeah.
And dad don't say shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, as much as, okay, yes, the mother would have probably refused to listen because in a lot of ways...
Moms do. Moms refuse to listen when their babies are being threatened.
Yeah, like, Elizabeth Banks is, in large parts, playing the cliché mother character. But, again, like, sure, why not? But, how do you not immediately start asking questions, for the love of God?
And if you've raised a child that you know yourself has never been hurt in its entire life, with the exception of that one scratch...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just saw them chew metal and not a scratch on that. Why would you think a bullet would do anything?
Like the look on his face. It's like, damn.
Well, the bullet, I could see the logic. Because number one, there's the cliche of every time someone is faced with a super powerful... Well, usually it's the henchman facing the hero.
Yeah.
But, like, they always go to the guns first. It never works, but they always do it.
It would have been nice, I'm actually surprised that they didn't do this, that it would have been nice if he got the second shot off and the kid just caught it. Faster than a speeding bullet.
Possibly a little too bang on of a Superman reference, but...
As opposed to...
It's one of those I can see the logic of not doing it, but I agree that it would have been nice if they did.
It's purely one of those little fan moments that's like, oh, that could have been.
Yeah.
But you're also looking at a 12-year-old whose father just betrayed him.
Yeah.
So there's no thought of, I'm gonna give him time to reload and fire at me again. There's a 12-year-old reacting.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened.
Oh, and speaking of what you were saying before, of like, they didn't really give him enough development, it would have been interesting to see the two personalities, like, of Brandon. He starts off as a little kid. That kid should have been terrified by the changes occurring.
Yeah.
And then that should have been taken over and erased.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see Brandon terrified of what's happening to him, and then having that just...
Yeah, they went very quick from, okay, so I wasn't adopted from an agency, I fell from the sky, I'm an alien, you lied to me, I hate this family, I hate all of you, and destroying all the family photos, too, standing in his female friend's bedroom, going, I'm special.
I'm better.
Okay, that's a little creepy, but it's very... You don't flip that switch that quick.
Yeah.
I don't care how old you are.
with the Michael Rooker appearance in the Stinger, I like the fact that this movie simply has the balls to set up a Wonder Woman and an Aquaman version.
Because going into it, you're thinking like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if they did this? And then they do it.
Oh yeah, no, I. Realistically, I don't think that this is going to have enough box office to be able to set up.
Considering it's had almost no advertising, the only way that I found out about it was somebody in my friends list on Facebook shared the trailer, and I went, ooh. That's the only way that I knew that this movie existed.
Yeah, no, exactly. It had good viral marketing, but I think that was about it.
It was kind of like inside baseball. You had to know about why James Gunn was not at Marvel at the moment. And you had to be like, okay, the excitement is seeing him do this without Marvel or DC. It's like, okay, you need to be like five layers of context in to know that this film exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love to see how the movie would turn out if it had more funding, if it had more invested in it. Because it has amazing potential. And I just,
oh, it absolutely does. Like this, in a lot of this felt like Gunn gets fired from Guardians 3, kind of goes back to his film roots a bit, gets together with his brothers and friends and goes, hey, let's do this movie.
Yeah.
And in that aspect, I was really expecting it to be more of a critique of superhero films, and it wasn't. It's a superhero film. It uses all the tropes. It doesn't subvert anything except that one primary concept of what you expect to be good is evil. It's by far and away better than anything DC has put out. And Shazam.
And
I like Wonder Woman.
I haven't seen Shazam yet.
It's good. I mean, like, it's not the best, but it's like, okay, you finally found it. Finally.
Oh, yeah, like, this, DC honestly could buy this, and then if they wanted to, they could probably use this as, this is a comparison I've heard online where this has been referred to almost as the origin story for Ultraman from the Crime Syndicate on, if I remember right, Earth 2 in the comics.
And it's much better than the Earth 2 Crime Syndicate's Ultraman story, which is Clark Kent becomes an astronaut, goes into space, either gets hit by cosmic rays or finds, like, cosmic drugs and becomes addicted to the cosmic drugs. That in Ultraman is addicted to kryptonite like it's cocaine.
Okay.
So he crushes it and snorts it. And that's modern Ultraman.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, and especially with that setup in the Stinger, like, I don't think it's going to get a cinematic universe.
Oh my god, I want it.
I would be down for it, and I respect the fact that, again, they had the balls to even try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
How about you start with the ratings?
Okay, what was your...
Straight up 1 to 5.
1 to 5? I actually give it a 4 out of 5. Could it be executed better with a higher production, or would I like to see it as a Netflix series or something?
Yeah.
Is it great as it is? Yeah. Love it. Love it.
I'd probably say 3.5 or 4.
Yeah, I'm more or less in the same spot, but I'm going with a 3. Partly due to the technical issues, but mostly, like I said, it's not as developed character-wise as it could have been. I could see the tremendous potential.
Yeah.
I could see what it's trying for. It doesn't quite get there.
And that's what's holding me back from loving it.
Yeah,
it didn't quite make it out of the ballpark.
No, exactly. In the end, I would say it's a very, very good movie. It just doesn't do enough to get me to the point where I can call it great.
Yeah,
it's excellent auxiliary reading.
Yeah. The nice thing with this just being a B-roll is I just have to say see ya, and then we fade to black.
Bye!
Don't forget to hit those like and subscribe buttons, share this video with your friends, and drop us a line anytime you like.